Good evening. You're listening to special election coverage on KRBD. My name's Layla Carey, and I'm here with candidates for the Ketchikan Gateway Borough Assembly. With me in the studio are Dan Bockhorst, James Montgomery, Austin Otis, Danny Pratt, Sven Westergaard, and Felix Wong. This is a call-in show, so if you have questions for Assembly candidates, please call 225-9655. But first, we'll start off with introductory remarks from each of the candidates. Tell us a little bit about yourself, and we'll start with Dan Bockhorst.
Thank you. My name is Dan Bockhorst, and I appreciate KRBD sponsoring this forum tonight. My attitude is that selection of a borough assembly member is a very serious matter for our community. The Ketchikan Gateway Borough has an annual budget of $74 million. It levies $20 million in taxes out of our pockets. It provides 27 different vital services for our community. And I think that voters should carefully consider what qualifications an assembly member should have. Personally, I believe that most of us would agree that these include experience. In that regard, I have 40 years of experience in Alaska local government, including almost 10 years as a Ketchikan Gateway Borough Manager. I think we'd also like to have assembly members who are good stewards of the public treasury. And while I was borough manager, the borough area-wide property tax rate was cut by more than 25%. Taxes on commercial fishing boats, planes, equipment, machinery, and other personal property were eliminated. And the Borough General Fund, which was $2.4 million when I came into the Borough Manager's office, was restored to health with $8.4 million. I think an assembly member must be accountable and transparent. And personally, I honor and scrupulously follow the Open Meetings Act and other laws, borough laws and state laws, regarding discharge of public duties. It's essential that assembly members and other public officials are ethical. And I recognize that local government simply doesn't work without public trust, and public trust requires ethics. It also requires that assembly members are capable. Personally, I've worked in high levels in local government in Alaska. I've only worked for three employees, which I think reflects well on my stability. I've left all three of those jobs at my will as opposed to the will of my employers. And lastly, I would say that it's essential that an assembly member must be well prepared. To perform the duties of an assembly member requires a great deal of time, and I have the time and the commitment to perform as is expected. So in sum, I'm well qualified to step into the role of a borough assembly member, and I would appreciate your support on October 2nd.
Thank you very much. And James Montgomery.
Good afternoon, and thank you to KRBD. I would like to start by saying thank you to everyone that has been supporting me so far for the candidacy of Borough Assembly. I'm a fairly long-time Alaskan, having lived in Anchorage for over 15 years. We fell in love with Ketchikan in 1994 when we spent our 10th anniversary here, and we moved to Ketchikan over 4 years ago. Now, I've been told I'm not your typical candidate, a square peg with a round hole sort of thing. I think that's what's unique about Alaska. So many of us are really not typical. What I can tell you that is typical about me is I strongly believe we must take care of educating our kids. We desperately need affordable housing for all ages. And the budget, it requires its own special brand of assessment, not just a snip, chop, cut, and upcharge. Rather, a detailed review, a decipher and untangling of what we have now. Finding new revenues that will not be a flash in the pan, making common sense expenditures, rather than something we will remember, some of the things that we remember that many of us would rather not. I have the ability to help make these things happen. I've always been for fiscal responsibility. However, as those people who know me can attest, I'm very creative when it comes to knowing how to stretch a dollar for its best use. I want to be the type of assembly person who will work for you, to always try and find a solution to questions and concerns put forth by the community. Because I am passionate about what I believe in and what I do, I will fight to get what's right for the people of Ketchikan, not just for today, but for tomorrow and for tomorrow's tomorrow. I'm running because I want to be a conduit for the people of Ketchikan who want to be a connective voice on the Borough Assembly. I'm James Montgomery, and I want and would appreciate your vote on October the 2nd.
Thank you. And Austin Otis?
Thanks. I'm Austin Otis. Thank you for having me here. I am born and raised in Ketchikan, Alaska. I graduated in 2013 from K-High. I'm a product of the public school system here. I also went to the University of Alaska Anchorage and got my degree in criminal justice, graduated in 2017. I came back to Ketchikan and I started working for the tourism industry, and I went into hospitality, and then I picked up a second job with going into a nonprofit called Ketchikan Youth Corps. And my campaign platform, I'm really just focusing on economic development, and what I mean by that is I'm really trying to find a goal. The goal is to provide long-term local jobs. You really do this through maintaining the shipyard contracts that we have with the state. I think that there needs to be a task force between the borough and the city and people at Vigor to really advocate for contracts and local employment. Also, I think the investment in mariculture development, it's a new industry growing here in Southeast Alaska. The borough in 2015 invested over $600,000, actually, to Oceans Alaska. And I just want to see that money is spent well and invested well. I think these new local businesses, such as Ketchikelp and Hump Island Oysters, are producing mariculture products that create jobs and add to our local tax base here. And secondly, I really want to focus on education, really trying to fund the CAP to invest in educational professionals and students. I think to do this, we need to find additional revenue sources and not rely heavily on property taxes. So this, I'm looking at our new sin tax that we added, the $2 a pack that have brought in over $1.1 million. I'm also looking at PILT, payment in lieu of taxes, which comes from the federal government and helps supplement us and our property taxes. And lastly, I really want to look at the blooming marijuana industry, and I think we can tax that industry to help our education system. And then lastly, I think housing is an important issue here in Ketchikan, Alaska. The borough owns over 12,000 acres of undeveloped land that could be sold for housing development. I'm really focusing on elderly housing to take pressure off of the Pioneer Home and the other limited resources for elderly people here in Ketchikan. And I really want to look at building more apartment complexes for seasonal workers. Because of our tourism industry is growing here, I think we need infrastructure such as housing for seasonal workers to live in. And then lastly, looking at local people, I think building middle-income homes for long-term residents such as myself is really important for people to have stability here. You know, the borough gave the McDowell Group $56,000 housing contract assessment, and I think we should find those the findings of that and implement them in HK. Thank you.
Thank you. And next is Danny.
Well, thank you, Layla and KRBD, for having me. My name is Danny Pratt. I am an intensive one-on-one paraprofessional at Schoenbar Middle School, an avid participant in First City Players Productions, one of the ever-growing population of seasonals to locals, and a lover of Ketchikan. The initial spark that led to my campaign for Borough Assembly was the ongoing negotiations between our school board and our incredible teachers, and those flames have been fanned by the state of our roads, our unfair housing market, and our increasing homeless population. Personally, I believe in transparency, and with me, what you see is what you get. I don't look at this position as a political stepping stone. I look at it as a way to form a deeper, lasting connection with my neighbors and the place that I chose to make my home. And I am ready to listen and to learn and to do my part to better this amazing community. So vote for Danny, October 2nd.
Thank you. And Sven.
Hey, how's it going? My name is Sven Westergaard. Thank you guys for having us here again. I was born and raised here in Ketchikan, born in Ketchikan General Hospital, grew up a lot over on Pennock Island, graduated from K-High in 2003, went off and did a year and a half of college, and realized I want to work in a trade and came back to Ketchikan with the IBEW, International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, and got a telecommunications apprenticeship. From there, I've been working nonstop with KPU. Like I said, I'm just a Ketchikan kid here. I'm not a politician, but I was asked by a lot of people when I was going to join in politics. And this year seemed like a good year. There's a lot of stuff coming down the pipe. We have a huge housing market crisis. There's a lot of people that are my age that can't move back home, and they want to now. And so they can't find a job that'll pay for what they need for wages, and they can't find housing that they can buy for their wages that they'll get in this town. There's a lot of other issues, but I'm not inverse on all of them, but I have a lot of family and friends in this place that have all sorts of walks of life, so I have knowledge from all sorts of different walks of life and knowledge of this town. This town raised me, made me the man I am today, and I want to give back to it and make this town better for the future. And so our kids and our grandkids can grow up in the awesome town that I did. Thank you.
Thank you. And Felix.
Good evening. Thank you to KRBD and all you longtime listeners and supporters of public radio. I'm Felix Wong, and I've had the pleasure and honor of serving my first term as your representative on the Borough Assembly, and I am seeking your support and vote for a second term. Once again, it is not lost on me that I am still one of the newest residents of Ketchikan and in the running for Borough Assembly. And in my relatively short time of living here, I've come to love and boast to friends and family overseas of our town's uniquely tight-knit sense of community and consistent commitment to one another. It is this spirit of community, cooperation, and collaboration that I seek to continue to bring as an elected official and will continue to advocate for the countless good work that people are doing that gives our community its characteristic charm. I may not have the history, breadth, and depth of technical bureaucratic knowledge, nor will I ever have the delusion to boast of it, but I have witnessed the sheer competency of borough staff, department heads, and the many people who have put in plenty of time and effort in keeping things going, keeping the lights on, and have come to trust their important perspective and understanding of each aspect of borough services. I have proven to be able to listen to both citizens, experts of particular subject matters, and borough staff in my bid to better understand issues and make my own judgments, and I guarantee that I'll continue to do so. Once again, I'm Felix Wong, and I seek your support for re-election. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And I want to remind our listeners that this is a call-in show, so if you have any questions that are burning in your mind and you'd like to ask them, now's the time. Call 225-9655. And I have a list of my own questions that we will get to, but first, I opened up my social media to listeners to submit questions ahead of this, and I have a pretty good list, so I thought I'd use those first. And I like using questions from listeners before my own. So the first question I got through my social media was, what are the three biggest challenges facing the borough now, and what will you do to address them? And this time we will start with James Montgomery.
Okay, the three most important. Well, funding for the schools, what are we going to do for housing, and what are we going to do to bring in more revenue? Because everybody wants to know how we're going to make more money to pay for everything everybody else wants. And that's a challenge that I don't think anybody really knows how we're going to handle yet, because nobody wants to dig deeper in their pockets right now, and it's a challenge we're going to have to face one way or the other. I think some of the things that we was spoken around this table already today have begun to address with the mariculture and with hopefully some of the things that are going to happen with vigor, we hope, and some of the new items that are happening in down the pipeline will bring some new things. I can only hope some of the things that will happen bringing revenue in this way will help that. The education of kids and the funding of the school programs and education is a must. We have to figure out how to do that. The new housing program, that the funding that was done for the government, everybody is sitting on pins and needles to see what they say. I'm very confident that it's going to say what most of us believe is that we desperately need to build affordable housing. We need to take care of housing both in for elders, for younger people, for transients, for military, and it has to be done in conjunction with federal and with state funding and with a concerted effort for many different people pulling together and getting this done. And I think this program, which was funded finally, should have been done 25 years ago, 20 years ago, was finally funded, was a step in the right direction, and I think that will be advantageous for everybody and all concerned. I'm looking forward to see what it says. But I think all three of those are critical and have to be done. How we're going to pay for it all, I can only hope, and we'll keep our fingers crossed and see how it's going to happen.
Thank you. And Danny Pratt.
Awesome. So I think one of the biggest issues in Ketchikan right now is the housing market. Personally, I have a full-time job with the schools. I have a couple other jobs on the side, and I live on a boat because I can't afford a house. So I think that says a lot about how there's not enough housing for the people who live here and the people who want to live here. I think we need to look at developing some of the borough-owned land and turn that into some housing for people like myself and, again, the elderly. And that kind of segues into another issue that I see every day is the ever-growing homeless population in Ketchikan. I host karaoke at the Potlatch Bar on Fridays and Saturdays, and so I am well-versed in the homeless population because they're always around in that Thomas Basin area, which is also where I live. And so it's a sad fact in this town that you can't go a day without seeing someone sleeping on the road or sleeping behind a dumpster. And so I'd really like to look into where we can find the funds to house them or help them or look more into what we can do to reduce the homeless population. And my third would be the status of the state of our roads. I can't drive from end to end without hitting, you know, a million potholes. And so that's one of the number one things I would like to do, maybe even before we develop some of this land, is fix the roads we've got. So that's what I believe is most important.
Thank you. And next is Felix Wong.
All right. Three of the biggest challenges that I see is the diversity of our economy and year-round employment. You know, currently we have our three fish processing plants as well as Vigor, Alaska, as one of the more staple year-round employers, and I'd like to see more businesses that are able to scale that big and hire people year-round. That would be key to improving the quality of life and our tax base. Secondly, as already brought up by our fellow running candidates, affordable housing. You know, it's really by the grace of God and good friends I have that I'm able to live here. I rent a room with some really good people. And I also know of people my age who have either decided to convert their seasonal status into a year-round resident or have finished with their further studies and have decided to return to Ketchikan and have trouble finding housing. So this would be one of the bigger issues that I'd like to see tackled going forward. Lastly, it's education. There was a study done, and it's now a known fact that within the next 5 years, up to 50% of the current teaching workforce is slated for retirement. Mm-hmm. And we do not want to spread our teaching workforce thin. This does our children and our future generations a huge disservice, as well as it causes much undue stress on our education system that we can very easily avoid at this time. So these are the three biggest challenges I see that I hope that we'll be able to address going forward. Thank you.
Thank you. And Dan Bockhorst.
Thank you. I think the biggest challenge is to maintain the quality of schools that we have. And I see a number of threats on the horizon with respect to our schools. The first is the Federal Secure Rural Schools Program, which provides our school district with about $900,000 annually. That program will expire in 25 days from today, and it's far from certain whether it will be renewed. The only reason that we've received money for the last 2 years is because of the $1.3 trillion omnibus spending plan that Congress passed in March. Another concern in terms of, again, this relates all to our schools and some of the threats with respect to funding, is that the Alaska Department of Education and Early Development projects that current fiscal year funding for our school district will be $900,000 less than it was last year in terms of the state foundation aid. And, of course, we all know that there are collective bargaining efforts ongoing between the teachers and the school district. Our superintendent indicated he was asked by an assembly member a couple of meetings ago what is on the table in terms of the collective bargaining agreement, and the superintendent indicated that the school district had offered the teachers $1.5 million. That's broken down $500,000 per year for each of the 3 years, and that they had already funded $400,000 for the insurance program. So that's an additional $500,000 or more when that is ultimately settled. And we all recognize that the state of Alaska is grappling with a $700 million deficit. And in order to deal with that deficit, there are increasing indications from legislators that they are considering increasing the required local contribution to schools, which is nothing more than a state tax on the organized boroughs. And if it were increased to the level that it was at in 2001 before it was reduced, that would cost our school district another $2.5 million a year. So if none of these things occur, if none of these threats occur, and we fund to the cap, as some people have indicated, that would cost our school district, the borough taxpayers, $2.5 million, which would be the equivalent of a 1.75 mill rate increase on our property taxes. If all of the threats occur, it would cost us $5.1 million, the equivalent of a $3.5 million increase. So that's the biggest concern that I have, is to maintain the quality of our schools. Adding taxes to deal with these risks, we have to consider that we're currently 23 to 44% higher in terms of property taxes and other taxes compared to Sitka and Petersburg and Wrangell. So the second concern I have is how to fund things, not only schools, but other services that people want. And then in terms of economic development and housing, there's been discussion at the forum, at the chamber today and here. These are great things to have. We need affordable housing. We need economic development. But I want to distinguish between what the borough government can do in terms of housing and economic development and what we would like to have generally as far as the community. We all, again, would like to see affordable housing, but to what extent is the borough government going to get involved in that when we're already having relatively high taxes compared to the other communities in Alaska? And then, again, if we do focus on economic development, I think that there are things that the borough government does and does well, and those include the fiscal policy of the borough. The borough has provisions in the law that give preference to local bidders. The borough also has provisions in the law that provides for tax exemptions. It exempts commercial facilities and commercial equipment, commercial fishing boats, planes, and other personal property are all exempt from borough property taxes. There's a limitation on single unit sales in that exceed $1,000, which again promotes economic development. And another important one is that there is a sales tax exemption for senior citizens. Seniors make up a huge portion of our population, and it's a growing portion. And I think that that sales tax exemption for seniors is very instrumental in stabilizing our population of seniors. And those are the points I'd make.
Okay. Thank you. And Sven Westergaard.
Okay. So I kind of have a different approach line here. First is money. I mean, a lot of stuff we need here, we need money for. Right now, the state funding and the deficit is a scary subject. Everybody knows that. But to get around that, there's we need to bring in more jobs, which also costs money. We need to figure out our industries that we can get into. Oceans Alaska, mining, fishing. I mean, half of our fleet, local guys in our fleet, go and take their boats up to Wrangell. There's ways that we can get more money back in this town. Then it goes down, I guess, my next one would be housing. Of course, everybody's brought it up. It's going to be a huge ticket number this year forever. And that also brings me back to my last, the future. Not just, you know, the future of our town for the infrastructure, which is dwindling. We have bridges out in out by Waterfall that are barely almost condemned. But also the future in our kids. I mean, if this town starts scaring away these families that have kids, then what are we going to be? We're going to be a bunch of old-timers sitting around here talking about the good old days, and we're going to be paying more and more taxes because nobody here is bringing up to pay more taxes for us. So my three-prong is money, and then that, yeah, we have to figure out what more ways to get money, and then housing, and then our kids and our infrastructure for the future.
Okay, and Austin Otis.
There's a lot of doom and gloom around here.
Yeah.
So I kind of want to do some current issues that I think that are affecting Ketchikan right now. Sven actually brought up a good point about the waterfall bridges. I just recently wrote an article in CIT News and in the local paper talking about these two important bridges that have access to Waterfall Subdivision and other properties beyond that. I really think that I actually had the opportunity to go to the North Tongass Fire and EMS Service Area Board, which oversees all the emergency services on the north end of the island. And they gave me a really good point that, yes, these bridges are important and that they need to be fixed with our infrastructure, but we need to think more long-term, and we need to think about putting water into those areas for fire emergency services. So I think right now that is the greatest crisis, if you will, in Ketchikan on the north end in the borough. And how we would really go about doing that and building a water tank there is that you could find PILT funding, which is payment in lieu of taxes, which comes from the federal government. They're non-refundable. It's from non-refundable land that they own around the borough, and they give us around $1.1 million a year that would help invest in fire emergency for that north end of the island. So that's an infrastructure issue, I guess, that is a crisis that's popped up recently. And then another infrastructure issue, I think, is the airport. You know, it's the second largest access point in Ketchikan other than the cruise ships. There's over 380,000 people that come through that airport a year, bringing, you know, money and tourism to Ketchikan. So I think we should look at the $500,000 that we just invested in the airport for air conditioning. Something as basic as that I think is important. And just the attractability of a good 21st century destination for people, access point to come through, I think will help spur jobs and people, more people, attract more people to come here. And lastly, an environmental issue I think that just came up recently is the fecal in our water. They did a little test, and there was like five or six beaches that had fecal matter. I just want the borough to look more into that and really assess where it's coming from. Is it coming from the cruise ships? I don't really know. I've kind of gone down that, and I don't think so. These cruise ships have very clean systems. I really think it's coming from local government sewage outfalls, and I think it's coming from people in the borough who have outdated sewer lines. So I think that really affects us when we're thinking about recreational value and when we're trying to go out to the beaches and enjoy, and that's definitely a barrier here in Ketchikan.
Okay, thank you very much. And while we were discussing that, we had a caller who heard people say they're concerned about housing and the high cost of living. Do you support pay increases for borough employees and especially teachers? And this time we'll start with Danny Pratt.
I absolutely support paying our teachers what they deserve, which is higher than what they're getting. As I am a paraprofessional. I am a member of the Ketchikan Education Association. I have been watching these negotiations diligently because as a paraprofessional, the negotiations for our contract start this year, and so they need to finish the teachers' negotiations before they can go into the paraprofessionals' negotiations. The teachers are asking for a cost of living increase. If you want your kids and your people to stay here and continue developing the economy here, you have to pay your teachers to teach your kids and to stay here. You are not bringing in people to teach here, which is why we have such a large portion that are getting ready to retire. And we need to start bringing in those teachers, and we can't do that without competitive pay.
Thank you. And James Montgomery.
Well, I definitely agree that we need to pay people what they deserve. And I also find it very disconcerting that the list that the kids brought to take to school this year included boxes of Kleenex and reams of paper. And it wasn't just the crayons that, granted, I'm an old fart now, and I don't know if I'm allowed to say that. But when I went to school, I took my crayons, you know, that's what I took. But now you have to take reams of paper and boxes of Kleenex and all the tools that you have to take to supply the teacher, because we don't supply our teachers with the tools that they need to teach our kids. And I think that's just criminal, and it needs to be addressed.
Okay, thank you. And Dan Bockhorst.
I don't think anybody here would take the position that people shouldn't be paid a fair wage, and I certainly do. Again, it's an issue. We have to fund those things. And in terms of the comment about doom and gloom, I'm trying to speak in terms of reality. We can certainly fund additional costs, and I think we should. How we do that is a matter that would be important for public input. We have to balance the existing property taxes and sales taxes with the needs and desires to fund things, including higher wages for borough employees and school district employees. In terms of using PILT money to fund something that the North Tongass Fire Department, it's important to understand that is a service area. It's one of 14 service areas in the borough. And if we're going to take area-wide money and pay $1 million project in a service area, there are 13 other service areas that are going to line up along with that. So short answer, yes, people should be paid for a fair wage.
Thank you. And Felix Wong.
Yes, I do. You know, we all deserve to be able to be compensated for the good work that we put into our jobs. And having met and befriended many teachers here in town, I've come to believe that they are more than capable at educating our kids, at inspiring them to think bigger, dream bigger. And they don't just do a good work in school. They also volunteer and commit themselves to the various other organizations and events that make Ketchikan such an interesting place to live year-round. And I believe that it behooves us to at least take the stress off of them from having to worry about how is it they're going to pay the bills or keep a roof over their head. You know, the reality is that even though the state is still in deficit, $700 million is still a far cry from the $4.3 billion that the deficit started out with when I was elected. And when I was elected, I had the chance to attend the Alaska Municipal League, and I've gotten numerous feedback from other fellow elected officials of other communities where they told me flat out that they wish they were in a similar financial situation that Ketchikan was in. And that was when the state was facing a $4.3 billion deficit. But right now, I believe that the state is in a better position, and that we as a community have always been in a position to be able to do what's right for our teachers and for borough staff. Thank you.
Thank you. And Austin Otis.
Yeah, so I think the borough just allocated money for a wage study. I think it was like $66,000, if I'm not mistaken. I'm really waiting on that. I think it's going to reflect the same as what the housing housing contract study is going to bring up, that, yeah, we need to pay our public servants more, and to keep good public servants, you need to pay an incentive. And I think that goes along with paying teachers. You know, if we're going to have tax cuts here in Ketchikan, we also need to have a discussion about where spending will be cut from in the budget. And I think, unfortunately, the money that will be cut will come from education, and I am not comfortable with doing that. So.
Thank you. And Sven Westergaard.
Yeah. Let's see. Where do I start? I guess start at one of my favorite sayings. I stole it from Matt Hamilton, is do the right thing for the right reason. These kids are our future, and one of the things that these kids need for being good adults for our future is to learn and learn the proper things, not just the bare bones. Like Felix and so many people believe and said, our teachers go way out and beyond the call of duty for this town. And there's so many of our kids that went off to school to become teachers that are living down south and making $20,000, $40,000, $60,000 more than our teachers up here, and the cost of living is way lower. That's across the board. Even the city is looking at that right now. The wages in Ketchikan are quite a bit lower with the cost of living than a lot of other places down south, and we need to have higher wages and better packages to entice these people to come back home and be able to buy houses and be able to spend taxes to make our city better, I guess. Yeah, that's about it. I guess I can go on and on, so I better just stop and shut up now.
All right, thank you. And the next question that was submitted by a listener ahead of time is, what do you do to connect with people who are in different socioeconomic classes to better understand challenges faced by others throughout the community? And please give a specific example of a recent interaction and what you learned from it. And this time we will start with Austin.
So I'm in I work for a nonprofit called Ketchikan Youth Court, and I regularly see the people that come through our program. It's usually people that get in trouble, whether that be through drinking or smoking, but they are routinely low-income people. And, you know, it's just really important that we have nonprofit organizations such as Ketchikan Youth Court or WISH that really focus on low-income people, because I think they are the most disadvantaged in society. But I also work on Creek Street, and with that, there is a lot of homelessness around that area. I work for a hotel in that area. And, you know, it's important that we have things like the day shelter and PATH that have the people that run PATH and the shelter have seen increases in homelessness in Ketchikan. And we need to fund these through the borough, grant committee that had just formed. I think things like the PATH could help alleviate the issues that are going on in the homelessness population in Ketchikan.
Thank you. And Dan Bockhorst.
Thank you. Just campaigning, I have an opportunity to talk to a lot of people in town. And in terms of nonprofit corporations and services that are partially funded by the borough, they've been funded for many years, and I've had opportunities to interact with the directors and board of directors and executive directors of those organizations. In fact, just today I had a couple of conversations with the executive director of WISH. So I think that I have had a number of conversations, deal with the executive director of the AARP in our community, and look forward to continuing those dialogues.
Okay. And Danny Pratt.
So on Friday and Saturday nights, you can always find me spinning the karaoke wheel. And there's something about a watering hole that brings everybody out. So I've talked to a lot of people from all different kinds of walks of life. In fact, most of the signatures on my nominating petition come just straight out of the bar. So one of my favorite things to do, as I've stated multiple times in my campaign, is to listen. So I have heard many people talk about the homeless situation while sitting in the bar because you can see it out the window. A particular instance that I can think of was a gentleman who I have actually spoken to personally. He is a Vietnam veteran. He is a genuinely sweet human being, and he just doesn't have the money to live here, and he has no way to get off the island because he has no money. And so that is what really breaks my heart, is to hear that he wants to better his position, and anything that I can do to help him would be tantamount.
Thank you. And James Montgomery.
Well, since being here in Ketchikan, my better half has been an educator for blind and visually impaired. That's a specialist. But here is employed with SAIL. And I get to go in and work because I'm kind of the fixer-er. And we build ramps and work with the wheelchairs and help do some of the technical side of things in building and that sort of stuff. And I meet an amazing group of people that want to make their lives better, that want to be productive individuals, that are rebuilding their lives, that are becoming reactivated individuals, that have moved back into the community after an event or after a challenge that they've had. And it is amazingly rewarding opportunity for me, and it's something that I enjoy doing.
Thank you. And Felix Wong.
Oh, wow, where to begin? So what do I do to connect? First things first, my previous career was sound engineer. Primarily live sound, so I stay involved in numerous productions by First City Players, the Ketchikan Area Arts and Humanities Council. I've also done sound for 2 years in a row now for Raining Man. What a great show. And besides that, I also attend several events. One such event that has always stuck in my mind is Death Cafe, that's organized by Leisha King and Marzette Ellis. You know, they are some of the most impressive people to work with. If you want to have a good idea of how nonprofits are run, they are some of the people who kind of set the standard, who are pretty much self-sacrificial for their cause. Besides that, I also have skills in fixing things. I've garnered the nickname Fix It Felix from the show Wreck-It Ralph. So I've done brake jobs, I've repaired ovens and all that for people who aren't able to afford sending their cars in for service when, you know, a quick brake job is all is needed. Besides that, I also do photography for events. I cover event photography, such as the upcoming Ketchikan Community Foundation, and from there I get to learn about some of the more creative ways grassroots level efforts are underway to fund things and not other nonprofits that help keep Ketchikan going. As I also photograph people, and you know that involves a good amount of communication and interaction that allows me to bring the inner person out. Otherwise, it's just a shell that I'm photographing, and that's not fun. So these are some of the things I do to connect with people, and I don't think I'll ever stop, because the people of Ketchikan are just such beautiful, beautiful people. Thank you.
And Sven Westergaard.
Where do I start on this one, too? So I was born and raised here. On my mom's side, I'm fourth generation Ketchikan. I have a lot of family and friends from all walks of life. I've had the people living on my couch because they didn't have a place to stay. I've had many people that have stayed with me and lived on my couch. I've had also a lot of people that are business owners in this town. That's kind of one of my blessings growing up, is that I did a lot of sports and a lot of different activities. I was the youngest member on church council. I played football, wrestled, drama, debate. You know, I have these people all across this whole town that I call family. A lot of them are just friends, but friends are the family you choose, and a lot of these people tell me their stories all the time, and that's one of the reasons I'm running, is because people need their story told, and they need to be represented on the borough assembly. And so that's why I stepped up to the plate. And that is actually one of the reasons that I believe that I'd be a great assembly member, because I do know the different walks of life in this town, and I can get information from any of those walks of life.
Okay, thank you. And the next question that was submitted ahead of time by a listener, Ketchikan's beaches have been testing over the limit for sewage-related bacteria. And what can the borough do to improve waste management in the community? And this time we will start with Felix Wong.
Yeah, that is a pretty crappy situation, so to speak.
That's terrible.
Boo.
Okay, I'll show myself out later. So one of the things that we could do to tackle this situation is... right now, the planning department is in the midst of redrafting some of the guidelines for property development outside city limits, and I believe this case with regards to the beaches testing out to have high levels of bacteria would be a good impetus to include the language for an enhanced waste management system for individual homes. And perhaps we could also, through the Borough City Cooperative Relations Committee, get in dialogue with the city about the wastewater treatment that's on the north end of the city limits. This is definitely a topic that we do not wish to ignore. And going forward, I hope to see us at least get underway with addressing it. Thank you.
Thank you. And Danny Pratt.
Again, I agree this is a huge issue. I believe we do need to look at the cruise ships. I don't think they are the only culprit, but it is something that can be looked into, because they are floating cities and they come with a lot of waste. I believe we do need to also in future development include sewage as an important factor in that development. I would really have to learn more about what our waste treatment current waste treatment is before I could truly make an informed decision on what can be done. And I'm more than willing to learn what we currently do and figure out a way to make it better.
Thank you. And Austin Otis.
Yeah, so I touched this in the issues. One of the most important environmental issues, I think, is the fecal matter. I think it really brings down the recreational opportunities that people in Ketchikan have. With our hot summer, you can't really enjoy the cool ocean water when there's poop floating around in it. I think more importantly, with more and more tourists and workers coming into Ketchikan, we need to look at a greater picture of our infrastructure. This is specifically what comes to sewer and sewer lines, upgrading those, getting places out in the borough to look at their septic tanks and just really assess where the problem is really coming from. Right now, I think we don't really know where it's coming from. We have some hunches. I kind of want to point the finger more at us than the cruise ships just because I think they have more systems that are contained on the ships. But we could also create local ordinances, if it is cruise ships, on dumping on top of the state and federal law. So, yeah.
Thank you. And James Montgomery.
Well, I have to agree with Otis on some point. We need to figure out what the problem is, and I'm afraid we already know pretty well. We have a pretty good inkling of what the problem is, especially if you talk to DEC. We've grandfathered in a lot of our problem. We have self-sabotaged a lot of the issue with some of the outfall, which we have allowed for many years. And that needs to stop. We need to back up and find out some of these old septic lines that have been outfalling into our waters and our beaches. We need to test those, and just because they were grandfathered in 50 years ago and the same property owner still owns it doesn't mean that they should be allowed to maintain the same standards that they had 50 years ago with the septic lines that they're now flushing out into our waters. And I've been very fortunate, and I get to travel a lot. I've been in the past, I've probably taken about 40 cruises, and I can tell you I've been down in those wells down there, and they are amazing systems down there. And what comes out of those cruise ships is close to drinking water as you can get. They don't flush out water out into the inlets out there. It's a problem that we have here. And I think we need to address, find out what we have. Granted, we don't have a full handle on it, but we need to test. DEC has done some pretty serious testing, and there's documentation out there on some of these problems. We need to go in, find out what the real problem is, and then we need to stand our ground and take care of it.
Thank you. And Sven Westergaard.
Yeah, I kind of agree with the previous speakers. The only thing I can say to add to that is that we can't be the only town, the only city that's ever dealt with this. Might as well go around and look who else has had this problem and see what they did. Why reinvent the wheel and spend so much money trying to make our own exact, you know, same decisions off of what other people have already done? They've done the footwork. Why not step up and take over their information and see if that'll apply for us?
Thank you. And Dan Bockhorst.
The Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation is currently undertaking a study of the contaminated beaches here in Ketchikan. They're working with city and borough officials in that regard. They're expecting to release that report in this winter. I think the borough has some direct responsibilities in both of these areas. First of all, some of these beaches, for example, Rotary Beach, is owned and maintained by the Ketchikan Gateway Borough. The borough also has responsibility for sewer systems and wastewater septic systems, regulation of those outside of the city of Ketchikan. Part of the problem is that not all the homes are hooked up to that. That issue has been raised with the borough assembly, and the borough assembly, at least in the past, has been unwilling to mandate that these homes hook up. And part of the reason that they have taken that position is that when the sewer system was originally extended out south, there was a commitment made by the public works director at that time that mandatory hookups would not be imposed. And so the assembly has chosen to rest on that position. Whether this report and some of the problems that are clearly growing in this community will change that position, we'll have to see.
Okay. And the next question that was submitted to me ahead of time is, this is also from a listener, will you encourage borough facilities and residents to investigate alternative energy such as solar? And this time we'll start with Sven.
Cool, I get to go first this time.
Yeah.
I believe green energy is a good thing. Being able to get out there and get solar power, wind generation, hydro, there's a lot of cabins that are already working towards that way. Actually, I believe Austin's dad is putting a mini hydro out of his place. but it hasn't been pushed yet in this town. I think that's one way that we could, one, alleviate some of the stress for the KPU system and SEPA, and the other, it's just good practice. Getting off those diesels down at Bailey would be an amazing thing.
Okay, and Felix Wong.
Cool topic, cool question. So first things first, during my time on the Borough Assembly, I've seen how entities like the airport have switched over to locally sourced pellets mm-hmm. for the heating system, and that's a good start to move away from a dependency on the electrical grid. With regards to other alternative sources of energy, it's a personal passion of mine to see either someone or an entity, a business entity, start up and kind of get our community down the road of thinking about innovating in the realm of green energy. I think improving on our ability to harness our hydroelectricity and all this sunshine we get in the summer. if we can find a way to generate excess energy and kind of ship it out in chemical means, if you were to take the excess electricity and split water into oxygen and hydrogen, you have the raw materials for the rocket industry, for other scientific industries, and this is one way we can get our community started on diversifying our economy and expanding our economy. So would I encourage borough buildings to look into alternative energy sources? Heck yes.
Thank you. And Austin Otis.
Yeah, so the cool thing about Ketchikan is we live in a very diverse environment here. Hydro, obviously, for Southeast Alaska with the Tai'i project links all of our communities together and brings a lot of electricity to the communities. But the also cool thing about Southeast is people forget about currents, tidal. I think there's huge progress to be made in tidal energy here in Ketchikan that we could harness and make into energy. But also algae with the mariculture industry growing. With biomass fuels, algae could be grown here easily. And to reiterate what Felix said about wood pellets, we have the library, I think, is ran off of wood pellets. The Forest Service building is ran off of pellets.
Yeah.
And now the Ketchikan Airport's ran off of wood pellets. So I think we have a very good diverse set of renewable energy here in Ketchikan. So.
Thank you. And Danny Pratt.
Honestly, I don't have much to add to that. I'm a total cheerleader for green energy. So we've got wind, we've got water, we've got sun sometimes. Let's harness that.
And Dan Bockhorst.
Thank you. The Ketchikan Gateway Borough Airport, adopting the biomass and putting that facility in place there, has been extremely successful. It has saved the borough a lot of money, and I was directly involved in the funding that went into the Serve That program. I know also that the Ketchikan High School is attempting to get funding for biomass as well. I don't know that solar energy would be a whole lot of effectiveness here in Ketchikan, but as was also indicated before, tidal is a prospective opportunity for alternative energy. I would also note that the Ketchikan Gateway Borough has invested in hydropower that funded about $2 million on the Whitman Lake hydropower project.
Okay, thank you. And I have heard they've made big strides in solar recently. It's it even works on a cloudy day. That's what I've been told. James Montgomery.
I can say ditto. That's not my everybody sit on it all.
Short and sweet. And the next question that was submitted to me, school funding is a significant portion of the borough budget. Do you support maintaining current funding levels? If you favor cuts, what do you propose the school district can do without? And this time we will start with Dan Bockhorst.
Again, as I indicated before, the Ketchikan Gateway Borough School District and the education of our children is extremely important. It comprises two-thirds of the Ketchikan Gateway Borough budget. I would hope that we can avoid cuts in the school district funding. I would hope that we could fund to make sure that we have a continue a better quality, good quality operation. So I don't support cuts to our school district, but it does encompass two-thirds of the borough's budget, and if we're not going to cut, we're going to have to figure out where those cuts are going to come from or where the money to avoid those cuts are going to come from. Again, I am not wearing rose-colored glasses. I do recognize that we're facing significant threats, and I'm confident that, unfortunately, that some of those threats are going to come to fruition. And so just in order to tread water, we're going to have to come up with more money for our school district. So it's going to be an important topic to discuss with the Borough Assembly, the school board, and citizens of the community.
Thank you. And James Montgomery.
Well, I'm afraid he's right. There is going to be discussions all the way around, but it can't be cut. And it may even have to be increased if the raises are there and everything. But education has to be funded. I go back to when I was in school. We have an amazing theater at the high school here. And when I was in school, we put on insane theater, and here it's all outside. You don't see kids involved in theater. You don't see kids involved in band. You don't see there's so much missing in the schools here, and it's got to be funded.
Okay, and Austin Otis.
Yeah, so I think to alleviate the issue of, you know, property taxes and property owners and having them pay property tax, I think we can look at a wide variety of taxes to help supplement that. Like I've said in the past, I think the sin tax definitely helped alleviate the pressures and brought in over $900,000 to the school district's budget. But also looking at PILT, which is specifically granted on the Department of Interior's website for schools, local school education. But like again I said, marijuana. You know, I just read an article today that the state collected $1.4 million in the month of July alone in taxes. You know, and I just think that's a huge industry here that could help supplement education and homelessness. But again, if we cut, I think the most basic function of government is to fund schools. And if we cut from the schools, it's going to come from extracurricular programs, like James said. It's going to come from plays. It's going to come from debate. It's going to anything that makes school actually fun. I'm a product of the public school systems here, so I definitely advocate not touching that. So.
Thank you. And Danny Pratt.
I believe we need to invest in our future, and our future is our children. And I firmly believe we at the very least need to maintain the budget for the schools, but I believe it needs to be upped. And so that's something that needs to be looked at, is where we can get the funds to increase the school budget, because it's honestly laughable compared to the lower 48. So I want to increase. That's what I want.
And Sven Westergaard.
I believe Austin hit the nail on the head. I believe, you know, our education in this town I'm a product of it too. And a lot of those things, those extracurriculars, made me who I am today. And I believe that we definitely need to figure out some ways to bring in some more funding, think outside the box, and think outside the box on how we can get some of these extracurricular activities. I remember when the maritime program was going to get cut. I was actually on the board, one of the student members on the board. We went all the way around to save the Jack Cotant, and we went to all the maritime industry and Southeast Steve and all the tugboat industries, and they ponied up money so we could get the program up and running. It was just one of those things. It's a small town. You got to have a program like that, and we got to figure out ways to get it. It doesn't always have to be, you know, higher taxes or this and that. There's got to be ways out there to get it, and we have to do that. That's our job as assembly members and as a school board members is to get the best we can for our kids. So we got to take put on our thinking hats and figure out ways to get funding for it. That's all there is to it.
And Felix Wong.
So this is a very similar question to the question that I fielded when I was running for my first term, and my answer is the same. You know, as Denny Pratt put, this is really more of an investment into our community and into our future. You know, Ketchikan has such a variety of jobs and needs for position to be filled. And, you know, I'm fully aware of K-High's impressively robust automotive class of the Jack Cotant program. You know, I would hate to have to see any of these cut, thereby robbing our children and our youth the ability to learn these very technical skills that would, given enough time working in the field, they'll pay a lot, which in turn allow them to pay into property taxes eventually. And, you know, for me, my belief is we should at least maintain the status quo and at the same time come up with creative ideas to keep funding education and pay teachers their dues.
Okay, thank you. And I do want to remind our listeners that this is a call-in show, so you can call with your questions. And if you're a little bit shy, Maria, who answers the phone, will write your question down for you. And we did have somebody who did that just now. And the question is, do the candidates support purchase of electrical vehicles and or subsidizing electrical vehicle purchases? That's a part one of a two-part question. The second part is, the borough purchased new diesel buses. Should future purchases be of electrical vehicles or vehicles that use liquefied natural gas be considered for the transit department? And this time we will start with James.
Well, LNG buses. Getting LNG here is a little challenging in the first place, so running buses off of LNG would be a little difficult, unlike having buses in Anchorage where natural gas is cheap and affordable. I think that would take some review to figure out whether something like that would be an affordable alternative. I would have to put the numbers against it to find out whether or not that would be a good decision. And the first half of the question?
Electric vehicles, encouraging the...
Electric vehicles have their pros and cons. I drove a Prius when I lived in Florida, and they were wonderful. The challenge up here is because it's colder, the batteries don't last as long, and you're recharging three times as often as you do in a warmer climate. And you have a drain down problem here. So I would have to do the math to calculate whether or not it would be as advantageous. Now a hybrid of some kind might have its advantages up here, but it's a higher learning, go to school and learn. It's a higher learning math problem to figure out whether something like that would be advantageous.
Okay, and Danny Pratt.
I completely agree with you, James. I would really have to look at those numbers. I mean, if you want an electric car, totally go get an electric car. That's awesome. But I don't think that it's necessarily the wisest choice, at least not right now, especially. But yeah, personal choice, get an electric car if you want to. But as far as, you know, the borough is concerned with the buses, that would really, you'd have to look at those numbers. And right now I'm 87% sure those numbers are in favor of the diesel buses that we got. So
thank you. And Felix Wong.
Once again, this is another cool topic. I'm quite a bit of a tech nerd. So with regards to the first question, I don't think it is a very feasible or tenable idea to subsidize the purchase of electric vehicles. However, because we do not exactly have the longest highways in the state, up to 30-something miles of road end-to-end, I do have friends who have bought a 3-year-old Nissan Leaf, and the going rate for those cars are about the same as what I paid for my Subaru Outback that's 10 years older. You know, for about $7,000 to $8,000, you can get a 2014 used or pre-owned Nissan Leaf. And, you know, if you want to talk about incentives, just look at our gas prices. By the gallon, our gas prices can compete with our highest GPA students. It's almost $4 a gallon. So being able to wean yourself off gasoline itself should be a huge incentive. With regards to alternative fuels for our buses, the good thing is our new fleet of buses come equipped with Allison transmissions, and I am fully aware that Allison also makes hybrid add-ons. So if it becomes much more cost-effective to retrofit our new fleet of buses to run off hybrid electricity, it is more than feasible to do so. Otherwise, currently, as Mr. Montgomery and others have brought up, liquefied petroleum gas is a very tricky item to ship up. If push comes to shove, we can always retrofit a propane add-on system. I mean, we do have a company that sells propane gas, but otherwise, right now, diesel is a good way to go in terms of cost versus benefits.
Thank you. And Dan Bockhorst.
I think it's just simply a matter of economics. Previously, the borough has explored alternative energy buses, and that issue was determined not to be feasible, and that's why they have diesel buses. As far as electric vehicles, again, I don't think it should be subsidized. If it makes sense economically, we should do it. Otherwise, not.
And Sven Westergaard.
Yeah, I don't really know much about the electric cars or the... yeah, so on that one, I'd have to just see what the numbers say and see what everybody out in Ketchikan says. If you have one way or another, come tell me about it. Give me a little education on this. It'd be great because it's a pretty impressive industry. I just, one of the ones I've never really gotten in.
And Austin Otis.
Yeah, so I have a little bit of interest in actually electric cars. I'm really fascinated with Tesla and Elon Musk and the way he's trying to make cars that are affordable for middle-class Americans to buy. You know, a Tesla, rather than $100,000, making a $30,000 car that we can use. And I actually had the opportunity to go to the transit department and meet with Director Reeve last week. And I saw those new buses. They're absolutely beautiful. If you guys ever have the chance, go look at them. He'd be more than happy to show you them. But he did show me how much cleaner they are than the older ones and how much cleaner they actually are than the tourist buses you've seen around here with black smoke coming out of them. But the filters on those buses can be up to $7,000. So it is cleaner diesel, but, you know, you pay for it. And if we were going to switch to electric cars here in Ketchikan, I would just be cautious of our power grid and what kind of pressures that puts on it.
Okay, thank you. And I know there were a lot of calls just now. We only have one person answering the phone. So if you tried calling and weren't able to get through, please try again, and she'll get to you as soon as she can. The next question I have that was submitted by a listener is if you favor cutting taxes in the borough, what specific areas of the borough budget would you cut to make up for that loss of revenue? And this time we'll start with Danny Pratt.
All right. Honestly, at this point, I don't know if I'm in favor of cutting taxes. I'm not too proud to say I don't know. I would really have to dive headfirst into the budget and see what's going on and see if there's a necessity for it, where the fat can be trimmed. So, yeah, at this point, it's really I need to look at it first before I can let you know.
Thank you. And James Montgomery.
Well, regretfully, I have to mimic your answer. I met with the borough manager and got an invitation to go in and look at the budget and review it because I myself have not reviewed it. I don't know. I hate there has to be challenges there. And I was actually quite surprised when he told me that there is really very little in the budget, the way that it's written, that can be cut. That the way that it's allocated out, there are very small sections which have not been predetermined when the budget is written, which affords portions which you can go in and cut without making major decisions on it, because such a large portion is allocated to the schools, larger portions are put into other places and things like that. So it would have to be something I would have to do some very serious some division into. I will say, though, that's one of the things that I'm very good at doing. I've done it for 25 years, go into budgets, and when I go into the business that I'm from, that's what I do, and I'm very good at that. So if it's there to be trimmed, I would be able to find it. I just don't know where it is at this point.
Thank you. And Dan Bockhorst.
Thank you. In the last year, 7.1% increase in borough spending and school district spending. I'm not in favor of simply cutting taxes. I think there has to be a dialogue in the community to determine how much taxes people are willing to pay and what services they want to provide for. Everybody wants wonderful services, but we have to be sure that we're willing to pay for them. As I indicated before, our taxes are high compared to Sitka, Wrangell, Petersburg. In fact, they're virtually just a little bit moderately higher than they are in Juneau. So we're already paying high taxes. We're getting good services, and we are facing, in my opinion, we're facing significant cuts, possibility of them, in our school district. So in order just to tread water, we're probably going to face higher taxes or have some cuts.
Okay, and what areas of the budget would you cut?
Well, again, we'd have to have dialogue on that. As indicated previously by one of the speakers, I think that the borough budget is fairly lean for $74 million. There's nothing there that is obviously hanging out that is fat, but we only have two choices, cut services or increase taxes, and there has to be a dialogue between the citizens and the borough assembly.
Okay. And Felix Wong?
So, having attended several policy and budget sessions, I can also attest that when it comes to the borough's expenditure, we are running as lean as we possibly can without sacrificing the quality of life that the services the borough gives to our residents offer. Personally, I believe the more tenable solution would be to focus on expanding our tax base, which is why I personally am very supportive of initiatives like the Ketchikan Chamber of Commerce's Live Connected campaign, which seeks to attract senior level programmers and coders who have the ability to work remotely from here in Ketchikan. I mean, if these senior level programmers who probably can command a salary of $200,000 or more are going to be living an hour away from Seattle, why not live an hour or and change flight time away from Seattle? Why not? I mean, we also have all this accessibility to nature where in a bigger city you have to spend a whole bunch of time, driving time and fuel to get to recreational spots. So it's these creative efforts that that I see are happening in town that I wish to see more of and continue to support. once again, when it comes to borough services, you know, we are at the point where if we were to cut spending some more, we will have to make some policy changes and make some deep sacrifices. And I do not wish to sacrifice our quality of life.
Thank you. And Austin Otis.
Yes, I want to reiterate what kind of Wong said, that, you know, it's not easy for public officials to cut government funding to certain programs. But I think what should be off the table is I think there's very basic levels of government that they should be funded: infrastructure, schools, and emergency services. I think we can all agree that those are the most important things that society likes. But I think what Felix said is broadening our economic system. We have a really good economy when it comes to tourism here. And I think our golden ticket is the CPV funds. We can use that to alleviate things that the borough, you know, necessarily be tied to. The tourism industry can help us pay for that. So.
Okay, and Sven Westergaard.
Last again. Well, Mr. Wong and Mr. Otis hit the nail on the head on that one. The only thing I can add to that is I hate it when people go for a budget and all they see is the white, black, and red. I'm all about getting down there, seeing what the boots on the ground, the people in the trenches are doing. I hate it when people see a big line item and strike it and they don't know what they're doing to that division or that entity or whatever. You need to actually get the whole story before you strike something dead like that, because sometimes it does. It'll kill that whole entity. And I think that's one of the reasons that people get a bad name sitting in the positions, is that they don't get the whole backstory of these people that you're – it could be their livelihoods. It could be whatever. You got to get that whole story before you start just striking things off the paper.
Thank you. And I believe we have somebody on the line, and that would be Kent. Kent, are you there?
I am here.
All right. Go ahead with your question.
Okay. I want to do a little bit of follow-up on the electric vehicles. Juno started a couple years ago with an incentive program to encourage electric vehicles, one, because they're economically cheaper to run, and two, because it decreases pollution. They have now more than 200 registered electric vehicles. The incentive that they offered is that the power company, and I appreciate the power company here is city-owned, gives you electric car owners a rate that is better for an electric vehicle owner. And it's been a big encouragement for people to buy cars. And as Felix said, you can buy an all-electric vehicle used for less money than you can buy a gasoline one at this point. Ketchikan has the luxury of almost 100% renewable energy when it rains. If we have a dry season like we're doing right now, we might be turning diesel on. But when we don't turn diesel on, all of our electric energy in Ketchikan and the borough is hydroelectric, renewable. And as far as the liquefied natural gas, we have liquefied natural gas in Prince Rupert. And, you know, the state is talking to Asia about sending liquefied natural gas to Asia. Why can't they send it to Ketchikan? Yes, we need some infrastructure to build up, but that's that's business. Is that a part of the infrastructure that should be encouraged and expanded? Let us be the first ones on the block in Southeast Alaska to go liquefied natural gas, not propane, liquefied natural gas.
Okay, thank you, Kent. And did you have anything you wanted to add, Austin?
I think it's a really cool idea that I didn't know that that was happening in Juneau, that they give incentives. I also think that the federal government gives tax credits, if I'm not mistaken, to people that own electric car companies or that own electric cars. Yeah. I thought that was a thing. But, the governor is actually trying to make a deal to create a pipeline for LNG, liquefied natural gas. It's going to be a huge investment, but I think I can see where he's going with that. I think it's definitely the future of fuel, and we should look into it and invest in it on a state level, absolutely. But that's a cool idea about Juneau. I didn't know if that's the city that gives power company gives better electric rates. So that's an interesting idea to explore.
I don't remember if Kent said so. They also have free charging stations around the community just to set up. It was cheaper to just charge or not charge anybody at all than to set up a metering system. So I believe that's also part of the incentive. Dan Bockhorst, did you want to add anything to that discussion?
Sure. It sounds like a wonderful idea. We've been talking about cutting facilities, cutting services. So if we want to talk about adding incentives to have electric vehicles, we've got to figure out who's going to pay for it. Even though the city of Ketchikan owns the public utility, I don't live in the city of Ketchikan, but I pay rates, and everybody that is hooked up to the electrical utility, it's going to affect everyone. So here's one more thing. We've had a lot of discussion tonight about nice things to add. We just have to figure out how we're going to pay for them.
And Danny?
Yeah, like that, I just learned a lot from that caller. Thank you for calling. I'm really excited about electric cars now. Again, kind of to go off my previous, candidate, it is a matter of looking at where we can get the money into. I'm totally down for it, but you gotta pay for it. So that's kind of where I'm at.
And James Montgomery?
Well, as I mentioned, I actually owned three Priuses, three different ones, and they were wonderful as hybrids. And my next door neighbor owns a Leaf, and he gets a charge a day. It takes it 4 hours to recharge it completely overnight on a 480 volt charging unit in 4 hours. 12 hours for 240 or 14 hours in 110 if you want to put it in for 14 hours to recharge it. And then he gets 6 hours worth of driving, which is, I guess, all day if that works fine for you, if that's what you want to get. And that would work fine. I actually talked to the company that was down here looking at putting the LNG pipelines, particularly bringing it in, working it down off down south where the old Cape Fox, I think it was the fish processing plant down there that they had. They were talking at one point, trying to convince somebody down there that they would put a processing plant in down there and bringing the gas in down there and running a pipeline until they figured out that we live on a rock. And running pipe under the rock would be somewhere between almost impossible and impossible. It was an amazing conversation. They said that they could do it, and then the cost of the LNG would be about 41 times what it is in Anchorage. But they could do it. It is something that is still, I believe, could be done. It would be overground instead of underground, and it would be something then that would be containerized once it was done and would be much less expensive than using propane and maybe even less expensive than electricity. It's great down the road, but we're talking about an election that's in less than 30 days and problems that are happening in less than 6 weeks and school boards, which are happening immediately. And yes, I would like to maybe incentivize an electric car for somebody in a couple of years and come up with some wonderful ideas in the next year or two or something like that. But I want to take care of my kids this year, and I want to take care of my education this year, and I want to take care of the problems and the budget and the things that are addressing us today for tomorrow. And yes, I'd like to talk about LNG, and I'd like to talk about electric cars and these wonderful things that we want to do. But let's take about
the things that are happening now and the wonderful mariculture, which we talked about at the assembly meeting just this last Tuesday night, which is happening, and some wonderful things that are happening in Ketchikan right now. That's all.
And Felix Wong.
Wow, that was that's passionate and no, that's no. Awesome. Do not apologize. That pretty much took most of the words out of my mouth. yeah, so, you know, while we do have pretty pressing issues to tackle, I'd like to thank Kent for taking the time to call in and inform us about what Juno is doing. I mean, this kind of gave me the idea of perhaps striking a deal with business owners or commercial building owners who have access to 480-volt three-phase systems. This is the tech nerd in me talking again. And maybe install publicly accessed chargers where they can then charge their vehicles quickly for free. Perhaps that would be something that we can tackle further down in time. And that's something that I would continue to advocate for whether I'm on the Borough Assembly or not. However, you know, as Mr. Montgomery brought forward, you know, we have some really pressing issues with regards to expanding our economy to be able to support that, and to give Mr. Borkos credit as well. You know, in order to pay for that, we need to expand our economy to be able to afford some of these things that would then improve our quality of life and our cleanliness further down the line. Thank you.
Thank you. And sorry, Sven, you're last again.
Again, bringing up the rear. Yeah, it sounds amazing, Kent. Give me a call. Find me on the road. I'm the big burly guy with the beard. I'd love to talk about it. But as the two before me said, right now, or three before me, everybody on this board pretty much, or on this table, said we got problems we got to deal with now. And I think that is definitely something that would be great to have on our horizon and start thinking about now, start looking in and get more educated. So Kent, again, hit me up, educate me. I love to talk. I love to hear about it. But right now we got huge issues that we got to deal with right now. Fight the fight that we have today, and hopefully we'll live tomorrow to bring it better.
Thank you. And the next question that was submitted to me ahead of time is, do you support additional litigation over the state's required local contribution versus public education? And this time we will start with Felix Wong.
No. It's a big no. I don't know. Even though I've seen this litigation come to a settlement, I'm hard-pressed to be able to report any objective, qualitative results that came out of that. The issues that we were facing back then still exist now. To spend more of our borough's time, effort, and resources on what is proving itself to be a diminishing return is not prudent, so to speak. So to summarize, no.
And Danny Pratt.
I completely agree with you, Felix. Fiscally, it's not coming back with, it wouldn't come back with anything that would even, the pros and cons don't weigh out right. There's hardly any pros, I'm being honest. So, yeah, just a no.
And Austin Otis.
Yeah, I agree with Felix. I think it was a fruitless endeavor by the borough, and I think it's really settled case law right now. The case, I think, did have merits to it, but we spent over $1 million, and that could go to more important local issues here.
So. And James Montgomery.
Ditto. That's it exactly. I think we could have spent the money better elsewhere.
Sven Westergaard.
Yeah, $1 million to fight a fight where you might lose. Why not go out and find some other revenues to get money that we don't have to try to sue the state? They have more lawyers than us, and leave the suing to things that we actually have. If you want to fight against the big guy, make sure it's something that you need to fight for and that you might be able to win.
And Dan Bockhorst.
I would say that since 2001, I worked with Senator Gary Wilkin of Fairbanks to bring about a cut, significant cut, in the required local contribution for schools. Since that cut was instituted, the taxpayers of Ketchikan Gateway Borough have saved $19.5 million. I will also point out that within a week of the time that the borough filed its lawsuit to eliminate the required local contribution, there was a House State Task Force on Education that came to a conclusion that the state simply could not afford its current level of support for at the current level at that time for education, and it took the position that they had to increase the required local contribution. They simply had to get more support from local areas. It's ironic that even though there was a clear conclusion by the State House Task Force on Education, I think that our lawsuit, and it certainly didn't cost $1 million, it was cost about $500,000, it has forestalled any further increase by the state legislature. Again, I think that we are facing that in the future, the prospect of an increase, simply because the state of Alaska has a $700 million deficit, and if they were to raise the required local contribution, which was the subject of the lawsuit, it would cost this community another $2.5 million a year. So clearly we have saved $19.5 million since 2001, and I think that the lawsuit was a very good investment. I would remind folks that we did win at the Superior Court level, and I wouldn't be one to suggest that the Supreme Court made a political decision, but I do know that when they came out with their decision, the price of oil had tanked. When the State House Task Force said that we had to get more local money out of this, I think the price of oil was $104 a barrel. So if the state felt that they couldn't afford it then, we're facing the prospect of increases. So I don't in the least regret that the lawsuit occurred. I think it was beneficial, and I think it significantly held back increases in the required local contribution. We may face those in the future, but I don't regret what we did before.
And part of the question is, would you consider another lawsuit in the future?
I think that the Supreme Court, they recognize that what the state of Alaska is imposing is a state tax. It's imposed on, of the 53 school districts, 19 of them avoid the tax. So I think the state of Alaska has to do something to make it equal. There is no rational basis for 19 of the school districts not paying the tax. I think that the Supreme Court, in its conclusion, indicated that if there's a connection, if there's a nexus between the constitutional provisions that require the state of Alaska to have support and responsibility for adequate funding of schools, if that connection can be made, it's worth considering. It depends on how much the required local contribution is imposed on local governments. I think that in the previous case, it's important to know that we were not the only ones involved. The Fairbanks North Star Borough also filed a brief in that matter. So if there's a great enough political pressure and a great enough legal pressure, it's not something I would put off on the table. I think it's a possibility.
Thank you. And we do have just about 20 minutes left in this forum. So if our listeners out there have a question they want to ask, now would be the time. It's 225-9655. And I do have another submitted question from a caller who didn't want to speak on the air. And this is, what are your specific ideas for economic development beyond what's already here? And this time we will start with Sven Westergaard. You get to go first this time.
Yay. I think there's some of the things we need to look at. Right now we're going through the oh, man, I just went blank. the fish wars. I can't remember the political term for it.
Stand for salmon?
No, the fish wars. Fish treaty from Prince Will, from BC. There's a lot of stuff going on with that in the lower 48, and our salmon right now are definitely could be hurting, and that's one of our big industries, I think, that we have now, but that could change substantially here in the future. Other than that, yeah, I think there's some things we can do. They were talking about Prince Rupert with the LNG. There's all sorts of other things. The mines that are all coming up definitely need to be helped along. We need to get diversification. That's about all I got. I'm not the greatest on this issue, but it's definitely one I need to learn more on. So, again, if anybody has anything they want to tell me, hit me up. I love the information.
Thank you. And Felix Wong.
Ooh, that's another fun topic. So some of the ideas that I've had, when I traveled to Texas early in the summer to visit a friend, he was telling me how there's a huge shortage of user interface programmers and coders. And, you know, being able to get into programming and coding for web-based apps or even cell phone apps, there's a huge demand for that. There are people who are willing to pay for that, and to learn how to do it, it doesn't cost much in terms of infrastructure. I mean, we already have computers, we have access to the internet. Coding classes are very accessible at this point in time. At the same time, to make it a feasible line of work, I believe, you know, programming and coding doesn't take much. There are plenty of cases, like in my friend's case. He works from home in Austin for a startup tech company based in San Francisco. So there is a working model that works for remote workers. And once again, this ties in with Ketchikan Chamber of Commerce's Live Connected campaign. And at the same time, we on a local grassroots level, we can also look into training maybe a new generation of junior-level programmers who can get started into creating their own apps, maybe solve problems for local businesses. On top of that, we could go further into tech. And, you know, one of my dreams that I would like to see us as a community and a region pull off is perhaps to turn Southeast Alaska into a technology and innovation hub for renewable hydroelectric energy. As brought up before by Mr. Otis and Mr. Montgomery, there's tidal energy and current energy that we could start an industry out of to generate this excess energy. And as I've alluded to earlier, maybe look into creative ways to export this green energy. And in improving our electrical infrastructure, we'll then be able to support bigger industries like mines that we've been talking about earlier at the chamber lunch as well as on this table. When we focus more on technology and innovation, we can then also train our own local workforce to support a company like UCOR who has developed very technologically advanced methods of rare earth metal separation that doesn't involve caustic and toxic chemicals. So there are many things we can look into to diversify an economy, and I for one am hyper passionate about this. As Sven said, if you guys have ideas, you guys want to talk to me about it, please, I am all ears. I'll super geek out with you over it. Let's start somewhere. And my belief, once again, is perhaps we can start with online-based coding schools and get into that. Thank you.
Thank you. And Austin Otis.
So I'm going to go with beer here. I think that I'm a huge beer guy. And I think breweries, since we have the tourist industry here, I think it's so applicable that they can come here for world-class beers. And you see these in places like Seattle and Portland and San Francisco, the just world-famous breweries. And I don't see why we couldn't have that here and have that industry here. But also, I think a very young industry that's growing is kelp. You know, we have Barnacle Seafoods in Juneau that produces amazing salsa up there. I don't understand why we couldn't have that here. But there is a company called Ketcha Kelp, and they make amazing relish. So I think very innovative things such as using your breweries and beer and using the ocean, I think has really impact here in Ketchikan, economically speaking.
Thank you. And Danny Pratt.
I think everyone who spoke before me has some pretty amazing ideas that I would love to geek out with them about. The Chamber of Commerce, Live Connected, sounds incredible, and I would really love to learn more about that. One industry that I've been interested in bringing to Ketchikan, or at least talking about bringing to Ketchikan, is the growing hemp industry. It's, you know, the plant is more than just, you know, weed or marijuana. But there are so many uses for hemp, and I think that's an industry that I would really like to look into getting here in Ketchikan.
And Dan Bockhorst.
Everyone around the table certainly is interested in promoting economic development, but we're all here as candidates for the Borough Assembly, and so I want to focus on not beer or hemp or other things that the borough government has no involvement in. The borough government, first of all, it does have things that it has economic development powers, and it does do things that are important to economic development in our community. There are fiscal policies, for example, where there are local preferences for bidders. There are tax exemptions where fishing boats and commercial planes, equipment, backhoes and whatnot, they're exempt from borough taxes, and that is a fiscal policy that the borough assembly enacted while I was borough manager. There are single-unit sales where sales taxes are eliminated for purchases over $1,000. And as I indicated at the Chamber Forum today, I think it's a very significant part of our economy that the fiscal policy of the borough encourages seniors to stay here. They currently make up 15 to 19% of our community, and they're encouraged to stay here through sales tax exemptions, and they contribute significantly to our economy. Another way that the borough government can help economic development in a realistic fashion is to lobby state and federal governments for funding and infrastructure in our community. And while I was the borough manager, we were successful in lobbying the federal government for multi-million dollar improvements in the Coast Guard base. We also brought the first 154-foot cutters from the Coast Guard into Alaska. Ketchikan was the first place. We got $10 million for airport improvements that are currently ongoing, and we were able to keep Gravina Access money. Over $220 million had been allocated by prior government administrations here in Alaska to other communities outside of Ketchikan, even though Ketchikan fought hard and was successful in getting the money. And there was a threat that the remaining $96 million was going to be going to other communities, and we lobbied hard and were successful in that regard. So that's my belief on economic development.
Thank you. And James Montgomery.
Thank you very much. And I hope you don't mind if I take four of your points, Mr. Bockhorst, and use them and tie them together with economic development and growth. So what I'm going to do is take four of your issues and pull them together in something that we need. As a board of directors member for Habitat for Humanity for 12 years, what we did was we pulled together funding from the federal government and from what they called the down in the lower 48. It's not the borough assembly. It's a completely different group. But we pulled together housing. And so I believe we can take borough land, and we can do tiny homes, and we can pull together a whole community, and we can get people that are being laid off by Vigor because, regretfully, Vigor is not doing what they were going to be doing for a little short period of time. And we can take these well-trained people that want to swing hammers and want to build and want to make money and take the funding that the Borough Assembly is going to have, and we're going to take the money that we're going to get from the government, and we're going to pull all this together, and we're going to go out there, and we're going to build tiny little villages and tiny little homes and tiny little places, and we're going to do what Habitat for Humanity does for homeless people all over the world, but not here in Ketchikan. So let's put homes, let's build little communities, let's take the borough land, which we own already, let's build the infrastructure that you say that we already have, let's take the money and give it back in the exemptions to the people that you say we can give exemptions to, and let's do something for Ketchikan all together. So thank you very much. I appreciate what you gave us so we can use that, and we'll put it together, and we'll build homes for the people that can't afford them, and we'll give them better affordable housing, and we'll take care of four things all at once in one fell swoop. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And we are just about at the end, so I think we have time for closing comments before we end tonight's forum. Thanks to all of you for being here. And for closing comments, we're going to start with Dan Bockhorst.
Thank you. Again, I want to thank KRBD for sponsoring this forum. My record of nearly 10 years of service as the borough manager and 40 years of service in the field of local government speaks for itself. I think I'm well qualified to serve as an assembly member. I have a record of effective leadership, judgment, commitment, transparency, and accountability. On average, for the past 10 years, only one in four registered voters has taken the time to actually vote. That means that the power of one voter actually exercised the power of four. So in some cases, the borough elections have been determined by as few as 27 votes. So I would, in closing, I would urge everyone, decide, regardless of who you prefer around this table, I would urge you to exercise the right to vote. Thank you.
Thank you. And James Montgomery.
I want to thank KRBD and thank our listeners this evening. I know you have a broad choice before you this election, and I hope that what you've heard here tonight will help you make an informed decision. I also hope that what you heard from me and from my opponents will sway you towards choosing me on October the 2nd. I want to be a conduit for the people of Ketchikan so that you have a connected voice with the Borough Assembly. I promise if you vote for me, I will listen to what you say, and I will work with you as your representative to make Ketchikan an ever better tomorrow. I'm James Montgomery, and I will appreciate your vote on October the 2nd.
Thank you. And Austin Otis.
So I really break it down into two things I think you want to see in a younger candidate such as myself. I'm really interested and respect the new perspective of such as myself in government to get younger demographics to vote and engage in local politics. I think you need younger people to run as candidates in an office that can connect with younger voters and can bring new ideas into the government. You know, you have a lot of people that are running or are in government. They're entrenched. I think it's important that they have the experiences, but I think it's important to also bring new experiences into government. And community engagement is also a huge part of my campaign. I think a good representative engages with the community by being on local committees, whether that be emergency service boards or in extracurriculars such as plays on the Humanities Council. But also going to entertainment events and connecting with citizens that way, but also doing community service, getting out there and connecting with the community. And I think when you connect with citizens as much as possible, I think they trust you. I think they vote for you in that aspect.
Thank you. And Danny Pratt.
Again, thank you to KRBD. Thank you, Layla, for hosting, moderating, whatever it is that you're doing. It's amazing. As I've stated multiple times, even today, but my platform, my campaign is based on listening. I want to hear what you have to say. Please call me, email me, text me, come find me. I'm around, I promise. And I want to hear your thoughts, what you think would be best for this beautiful community of ours. And more importantly than that, go out and vote on October 2nd, hopefully for me, but more importantly, just vote.
And Sven Westergaard.
So, my name is Sven Westergaard. I'm a Ketchikan kid. I grew up here, born and raised. I guess my only platform is do the right thing for the right reasons. I don't have any record, don't have any promises. All I can tell you is that I'm going to go out there and try to do what's best for this town to make this town as good as I know it can be. I know we have a lot of issues coming up, and I may not be the best at all of them, but come out and talk to me. Tell me what you think. Like I said, I know a lot of people in this town, so give me the information, and I will represent Ketchikan to the best of my abilities and do the right thing for the right reasons. So come out and hopefully vote for me.
And Felix Wong.
First off, I'd like to thank KRBD and listeners, longtime supporters of public radio, and people who tune in for election news and election coverage. Thank you for staying up with us while we geek out over really technical stuff. First and foremost, I run on a platform of community-mindedness. As I mentioned before, there's a certain commitment that every individual resident in town has to each other, and that in itself is inspirational to me, and is why I am seeking to run again. Right now on the Borough Assembly, there's a newly minted grants application process that seeks to streamline the grants application for nonprofit agencies. And if you want to have a good lesson in how to stretch a dollar, volunteer for an afternoon with a nonprofit agency, and holy cow, you will learn how to be frugal. And not only that, as you volunteer with these nonprofit agencies, you thereby help service our community and alleviate some of our issues that we face financially. As evident from tonight, there are a bunch of us here who are also community-minded, so come on and vote. Vote for me, vote for the other five candidates here. It's a worthwhile effort.
Thank you. And that is it for KRBD's Borough Assembly Call-In Forum. I've been your host, Layla Carey. Thanks to the candidates, Dan Bockhorst, James Montgomery, Austin Otis, Danny Pratt, Sven Westergaard, and Felix Wong. And thanks to everyone who called in with a question. I'm sorry if I wasn't able to get to yours. For more special election coverage, you can tune in to KRBD at 7 p.m. on Monday, September 10th. That forum will feature the four candidates for Ketchikan City Council. And please remember to vote on October 2nd. Good night.